Our initial reaction probably is to say no. None of us would like to admit that. But is there any weakness among us? Let me be a little bit more specific. We're human. Life is hard. We face those difficulties. Our energy is not unlimited. We get tired. Are you tired this morning? Me too. We have two of our men, at least two of them, maybe there's more that I don't know of, that you probably wouldn't know it because they're always here, but they work overnight shifts Saturday night, and they're always here to worship on Sundays, but they're probably not the only ones tired. We're limited in what we can do, what we can handle, how much we can think about and take care of. Are you busy? Do you have so much going on that you feel like you can't give attention to all the things that need to be given attention? Are you facing some sort of crisis, sickness, death in the family, injury, a job uncertainty? This is part of being human. Have you been hurt by other humans, people that have done you wrong, treated you unfairly? Life is hard. But what happens, to make things worse, is that Satan has a way of finding those places where we are stretched thin and attacking those weak points, testing our patience when we are tired, tempting us to get our priorities out of whack when we are busy, feeding us doubts and difficult questions when we're facing a crisis. And we start thinking, why me and why now? Tempting us to be bitter when other people have done us wrong. Life is hard. Satan knows that, and he attacks us in those ways. That's what I mean by weakness. Anybody here feeling weak this morning? If so, I hope that we that are in that situation can find comfort and strength in the passage of Scripture that Drew mentioned earlier in our service. In the book of Hebrews chapter 4, where it says that, therefore, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast to our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things, as we are, and yet without sin. Therefore, let us draw near with confidence to the throne of grace, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. What the writer of the book of Hebrews is encouraging us to do in this passage is not easy. To hold on, to hold fast to the confession. You know, each one of us, if we're in Christ, if we've been baptized into Christ, we've made a confession. That's not just those few words we said before we were dunked in the water, but we've made a commitment. We've confessed our allegiance, our loyalty to King Jesus. And we're being told to hold on to that, even though life is difficult. We're being told to draw near to him. Those things are hard, but the writer says that in the midst of those difficulties, trying to hold on, trying to draw near, keep going, we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize. We're always told to avoid double negatives. Did you ever learn that in writing growing up? But we have a double negative here. Seems kind of strange. Why does he not just say Jesus can sympathize with our weaknesses? I think it's because this is a natural question. Maybe you've asked this question before. Maybe we would ask, does Jesus know what it's like? And maybe we're tempted to say, Jesus cannot sympathize with me. And so the writer of the book of Hebrews says, no. We do not have a high priest unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been pushed. Jesus Jesus of Nazareth, fully man. He experienced all the things we mentioned, all those limitations of being human, being tired, being stretched thin, being hurt by others, being let down by others, experiencing unfairness. He experienced all those things, and Satan went after him, tempted him in all ways as we are tempted and tested. And yet, he did not give in to that. And so maybe that would cause you to say, see, he doesn't know what it's like because he never sinned, so he can't relate. He doesn't really know. And I would suggest to you that it's actually the opposite of that. Who knows better? Who really knows the strength and the power of a heavyweight boxer? Someone who goes into the ring and gets knocked out with the first swing? Or someone who goes into the ring and goes 15 rounds and never falls? That's the person who really knows the strength of the one they're up against. Jesus was pushed. Satan threw everything at him he could think of that he could try. Jesus knows. He can sympathize. And what that means is that we can go to him, and he pities us. He has compassion. He has empathy. He has mercy and wants to help us in our time of need. The book of Hebrews is written to a group of people that they're not blatantly standing up and saying, I'm done with Jesus. I'm against him. I'm turning away from him. The book of Hebrews was written to a people that are experiencing those difficulties of life, and over time, it's just become hard. At first, they were committed to the Lord, willing even to give up things for Jesus, to follow him. But it seems like it's been a while, and life has not really gotten any easier. In fact, it seems to have gotten harder. There seems to be pressure from friends and family. And so now, slowly, they're drifting away, or at least some of them are, to the point where they are tempted to give up all together. And the message of the book of Hebrews to these people is not to drift, but to consider and to remember who it is that they serve. They serve a great king and high priest in Jesus, and that he is greater than anything else, anything that we could turn our attention to, and he is what we need to hold on to. I hope that you'll follow along with us in the book of Hebrews. We've been looking at this book over the last couple months, and we're going to be in chapters 5 and 7 this morning, and you will benefit, I think, from having your Bible open to that. It's good to have people that are visiting with us. We don't know why you're here. We hope we get to meet you, talk to you, and learn about your situation and how we can help if you are in need of help. But we're honored to have you, and we hope that all of this that we've done has been encouraging to you, and of course, that it's glorifying to God. One way to look at the book of Hebrews is to look at the first 8 chapters or 7 or 8 chapters and see how the Hebrew writer is comparing Jesus to things of the old covenant and how Jesus surpasses all of those things. He's greater than angels in chapters 1 and 2. That he's greater than Moses and Joshua in chapters 3 and 4, the deliverers of the Old Testament. Jesus is greater than them. And that he is, in chapters 5 and 7, greater than the priests of the Old Covenant. But again, all of this is an effort to motivate his readers to hold fast and to draw near to this one who is so great. And this morning we're going to talk about this idea of priests. And we're at a little bit of a disadvantage, I think. Because the people reading this, they are Hebrews, after all. That's why we call the book of the Hebrews. It's written to Jewish Christians, to Hebrew Christians. They would have been very familiar with priests. Most likely, especially if they're living in and around Judea and Jerusalem, they might have seen priests on a daily or weekly basis, serving in the temple. They would have understood this concept. But for us, we're not as familiar with it. We're a little more removed from the idea of priests. And so to say that Jesus is a greater priest, and that's really what the Hebrew writer is going to say, that he is a priest, but he is a far greater priest. What does that mean? How should we understand that? Well, we've actually talked about this recently in the study of the book of 1 Peter, what it means to be priest. So we won't belabor the point, but the Hebrew writer actually helps us out and gives us a little bit of a definition or an idea of what he means when he talks about priest. Notice in chapter 5, in the first couple verses, he explains what a high priest does. And he says that every high priest taken from among men is appointed on behalf of men in things pertaining to God in order to offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can deal gently with the ignorant and misguided, since he himself also is beset with weakness. If you remember our discussion of 1 Peter, we said actually that priests have a twofold job. And the job of a priest is to help men come to God, or to bring men to God, but also to bring God to men and to help men on behalf of God. And you see actually both of those things represented in what the Hebrew writer says, that a priest, a high priest, brings gifts and offerings for man to God. He is appointed on behalf of men to bring their worship and their sacrifice to God. But on the other hand, he deals gently with weak and ignorant and misguided humans and deals with them. And the Hebrew writer points out that he has a special capacity to do that. Did you notice? That he can deal gently and he can help those that he serves and that he's bringing to God because he experiences the same things they do. He has weakness. And I think the weakness here is the weakness that we were just describing. Not necessarily, although this plays into what the Hebrew writer says in these chapters, not necessarily that he's sinful and so he can help sinful people, but that he experienced the difficulties and the tests and being stretched as being human, the weakness of being human. And so he understands that can help those who he serves. Well, the first point that the Hebrew writer makes is that Jesus is a priest. He goes on in the next few verses to say that what makes a priest is that God appoints him a priest, that he doesn't raise himself up, but God glorifies these high priests. That there was a system according to the law of Moses that those that were the descendants of Aaron would be raised up by God to be high priests. He goes on to say that this is exactly what has happened to Jesus. And he quotes from a very important psalm in the context of the book of Hebrews, Psalm 110, where God says of the Messiah through the mouth of David, "You are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek." And the Hebrew writer's point is that just like the high priest of old, Jesus has been appointed by God to be a high priest. But he goes on to show how it is that Jesus is a priest. And he says that in the days of his flesh, he offered up both prayers and supplications with loud crying and tears to the one who was able to save him from death. And he was heard because of his piety or because of his reverence. He says that although he was a son, he learned obedience from the things which he suffered. And having been made perfect, he became to all those who obey him the source of eternal salvation, being designated by God as a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. Just as those high priests of old could deal gently with those that they served, the misguided and the hurting and the struggling and the wayward, in the same way Jesus experienced those same weaknesses of being human, that he was tempted, he was tested, he was pushed to the limit, as we said earlier, in all things as we are, and yet without sin. But the Hebrew writer paints a picture here, a description about Jesus crying out to God in his suffering. And there's some question about what exactly he's referring to here and how we should interpret this. But maybe the primary image that comes to mind, whether this is what is being referred to or not, we can't help but think of the Garden of Gethsemane. And think about Jesus in that moment. Talk about being tested. Talk about being pushed to the limit. Can you imagine knowing that you're about to be executed? Stop right there. I can't imagine that. But knowing that you're about to be executed and it's all unfair, you don't deserve any of this punishment that you're about to receive. And all those that are closest to you, they don't get it. Your closest friends and family members, they don't understand. They actually kind of think you're a little bit crazy. They don't know what's going on. And when you need them the most, they're nowhere to be found. Can you imagine going through what Jesus went through on that night that he was betrayed? By the way, he was up all night. You ever think about that? Talk about experiencing the weakness of being human and being pushed to the limit. Some of us don't operate very well on little sleep. Jesus, tired, exhausted, facing death. It says that he cried out, as a priest would. He cries out to the one able to save him from death, and he was heard. What does that mean? Because he wasn't delivered from death. He wasn't spared, we should say, maybe, from death. So maybe the Hebrew writer means that his prayer was heard because he was brought through death and raised from the dead. Or maybe he's referring to the fact that Jesus' prayer, while it was, take this cup from me, remember his ultimate prayer was what? Not my will, but your will be done. And so maybe God heard him and gave him the strength. Gave him the strength to endure and to do the will of the Father in that moment. But Jesus had to experience these things. He had to learn obedience. He had to suffer so that he could know and so that he could serve as a high priest forever. And so the first point I think that we want to make about us as we think about the suffering of Jesus, the great high priest, we need to draw near. Draw near to find mercy from him who understands our weakness. This is what happens in our weakness. This is maybe one of the things that Satan does, is he draws us away. When things get hard, we want to pull back. And we think, well, I just need time alone. No, other people don't get it. Other people don't understand. You know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe it's true that other people in church don't really get it and can't relate to our situation. But Jesus knows. Jesus understands. And he calls on us to draw near because he wants to help us. He looks at us in our misery and in our struggles, and he has compassion and pity. And he says, I know what it's like. I've been there. He wants to give us grace to help in our time of need. Let's not shrink back and pull away in our hardship and in our weakness. Let's fall before him in our weakness and say, Jesus, you can help me. Please, help me. Jesus is a high priest. He knows what we've been through. He can relate to us. He sympathizes with our weakness because he's been through it. But there's more that the Hebrew writer wants to say about Jesus, because he's not just a high priest. He is a greater high priest. And for this discussion, he brings up the obscure Old Testament reference of this guy named Melchizedek. And he ended that passage that we read in chapter 5 by saying that he was designated, Jesus, a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. And if you remember our lesson from 2 weeks ago, this is where the Hebrew writer actually stops for like a chapter and a half. And he says that this is difficult stuff, that this teaching is hard. And actually, that the right readers of the book of Hebrews, and as we talked about, maybe that includes us, need to fix some things in our own hearts and in our own ears to really pay attention and to work hard to understand, to not be lazy listeners, to not be content with the milk of the word, but to work hard to understand the difficult things of Scripture. But after all of that, he comes back in chapter 7 and verse 1 to the idea of Melchizedek and how Jesus is a priest according to the order of Melchizedek. What in the world is the Hebrew writer referring to? Well, if you've never heard of Melchizedek, don't worry. His name only shows up just a couple times in the Old Testament, and then really only once here in the New Testament in this section of Hebrews. But it refers to a story back in the book of Genesis. And in fact, the story itself in Genesis chapter 14, it's weird even before you get to Melchizedek. But there's a war that's going on. There's 5 kings against 4 kings. And in this war, the king of Sodom, which if you remember is where Lot, Abraham's nephew, was living in around the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, the city of Sodom was attacked. Its people were taken captive in this war. And Lot himself and his family were taken as captives. So Abraham says, I'm going to do something about this. So one of the most amazing stories about Abraham, he says, I got 300 guys in my house. Let's strap up and let's go to war. And so he goes and he defeats this army of this coalition of kings and defeats them and brings the spoils back from this war. And as he's on his way back, out of nowhere, with no introduction, Melchizedek shows up. And this is the only thing said about him. Genesis 14, verse 18 to 20. That Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. Now he was a priest of God Most High. He blessed him, that is Abraham, and said, blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand. And he gave him, and we want to note that's Abram gave Melchizedek, a tenth of all of those spoils that he had brought back from war. And that's it. Literally, the next verse, it's like nothing happened. Back to the story we were telling about Abraham and the king of Sodom. What in the world is going on here? And remember that all those years later, with this being the only reference to Melchizedek in Genesis 14, David, out of nowhere, says in Psalm 110 of the Messiah, you have made him a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. Well, the Hebrew writer has quite a bit to say about this. And what he does is he takes Melchizedek, this mysterious figure, and he shows all the parallels, all the similarities, to show how this Melchizedek is a picture, a dim picture, a shadow of what is to come, a shadow of Jesus who is to come. And he explains several things in the first 10 verses or so about Melchizedek. First of all, Melchizedek's name means the king of righteousness. So we think about Jesus in that regard. He is the king of Salem. By the way, this is Jerusalem before it's called Jerusalem. But Salem means shalom, peace. He's the king of righteousness. He's the king of peace. And he is a priest of God Most High. Again, not a lot of explanation about that. But he's a priest of God, the God of heaven. But what the Hebrew writer emphasizes is his greatness in comparison to Abram, the great forefather of the Hebrew people and of all of God's people. Abraham, the patriarch. Melchizedek shows himself to be superior in two ways. One, he blesses Abraham. And the way this works is that the greater always blesses the lesser. Someone who's below somebody else really doesn't say, oh yeah, you know, I bless you. Okay, that is not the way it works. It's the greater person that blesses the lesser. And so Melchizedek blesses Abram, and on the flip side, Abram pays a tithe, a tenth, to Melchizedek, showing his own subservience or his inferiority to Melchizedek. And so here we have this picture of a king, of a great king, a king of righteousness, a king of peace, who is also a priest, who is the intercessor in some ways here between Abram, the patriarch, and God, and to whom Abram shows respect. And so the Hebrew writer uses this as a picture of the Old Covenant, because remember, Levi, the priest of the Old Covenant, that's the grandson of Abram. And so it is as if Levi himself, the original priest, is subject to this greater priest. But the point is that if Psalm 110 says that Jesus is a priest after the order of Melchizedek, well, that means something's changed here. But what that means is that no longer are we going to be dealing with priests of the tribe of Levi. Now there's a new priest. Now there's a new priesthood, and it's not just a new one, it's a better one. It's a greater one. And he says this in kind of a summary of the replacement of the Melchizedekian priesthood, that is Jesus, and the Levitical priesthood, which is passing away. He says the former priests, on the one hand, existed in greater numbers because they were prevented by death from continuing. But Jesus, on the other hand, because he continues forever, holds his priesthood permanently. Therefore, he is able to also save those forever. To save forever those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. One of the things that the Hebrew writer cleverly says about Melchizedek is that, as we mentioned, he comes from nowhere and then we don't know what happens to him. And so he says, in a manner of speaking, it's as if he had no beginning and has no end. There's no genealogy, no father or mother mentioned, and then we don't know about his end. And so it's as if Melchizedek has always existed and always will exist. Now, of course, that's probably not actually the case. Okay? Melchizedek was a man like any other man. But it is true of Jesus that he is forever. He has no beginning. He has no end. And so unlike the Levitical priest that you always had to replace him because there's this thing like called death. So one priest would die and you have to find a new one. Jesus is a greater priest. He lives forever. And not just that he lives forever, but he saves forever those who draw near to him. And he always lives to make intercession for them. I hope the Melchizedek stuff isn't too boring. It is difficult. We were warned about it, by the way. So don't say that the Hebrew writer didn't tell us it was coming. Because he took a chapter to explain what I'm about to tell you, it's kind of difficult. It's going to take some chewing on. So maybe you're not really sure about all that stuff that I just said. But let's bring it back and focus on what I think the point of this is. The Hebrew writer made it a point to tell us that Jesus is a priest, that he knows what it's like, he can relate to us. But I think he's saying here in chapter 7 that he's not just someone who can relate to us because he's been through what we've been through, but he is so great and he is eternal and he is exalted and he is holy. He's the kind of priest we need. You know, we like when people can relate to us, right? When they've been through what we've been through. But I hope we understand that we need something more than that. Because there's lots of humans that can relate to me. There's lots of things in this life that can connect with me and my humanity and my desires and my reason. But let's not forget the whole point here. The whole point is that we're not trying to stay right here. We're trying to escape the corruption of sin that has destroyed humanity. We're trying to go beyond our sin and our weakness. We're going to something greater and something better. And so, yes, it's amazing that Jesus can relate to us, that he can sympathize with our weakness. But what he wants to do is to lift us up out of our weakness and to make us strong and to save us forever if we will draw near to him. And so he's not just a priest. He is a greater high priest, a priest and a king forever. And so he goes on to say in the next verses, in the last verses of Hebrews 7, it was fitting for us to have such a high priest. And notice these descriptions because they're different than what we saw in chapter 5. Holy, innocent, undefiled, separated from sinners, and exalted above the heavens. Let me just stop there. I hope that shocks us a little bit because we love to talk about how Jesus came down and spent time with the sinners. And that's exactly right, he did that. Thanks be to God that he loved us enough to walk with us and to talk with us and to dwell among sinful people, to care and to have pity upon us. But we need to notice this too, that Jesus is not like us. He is tempted in every way, yet without sin. He is holy. He is innocent. He is undefiled. He is separated from sinners and exalted above the heavens at the right hand of God. And because of that, he does not need daily, like those other priests, to offer up sacrifices, first for his own sins and for the sins of the people. Because this he did once for all when he offered up himself. For the law appoints men as high priests who are weak. But the word of the oath, that is Psalm 110, you are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. The word of the oath, which came after the law, appoints a son. Made perfect forever. Jesus sympathizes with our weaknesses, but he himself is not weak. He is strong, and so he can reach down and he can grab hold of us and relate to us in our difficulty But then because he has been made perfect forever, because he learned obedience to the things that he suffered, because he went to the cross and conquered sin, and he raised from the dead to conquer death for all time, he can lift us up out of the pit that he's been in. He can raise us up to walk in newness of life now. And he's given us the hope that we will be raised from the dead when he comes back and victoriously reign with him, our King Most High, and our priest forever. Let's draw near to the one who knows what we're going through. And let's draw near to our high priest and forever king who can save us forever. Again, the things of this world, they're enticing because they can connect to us. The things of this world, they relate to us. They appeal to our desires, to our humanity, to our human reason. And so we connect with that. That's one of the reasons why the world can be so enticing. Its philosophies, its appeals, its entertainment, its recreation, it all is so appealing to us because it connects with our humanity. But it can't save us. It can't save us. And if we just latch on to the things of this world and look to these things for meaning and purpose, we'll be lost forever, holding on to things that are relatable but can't save us. Jesus saves us forever. From sin and from death. Let's draw near to him. Let's leave the things of the world and draw near to our king and our priest. Because when he comes back, there is a role that's going to be called. And when that role is called, will our name, will my name, will your name be called? How will we respond? If you have not yet submitted to Jesus so that he can save you, died with him in baptism, and been raised in that new life, Jesus can save you. Come to him this morning. And if you, like the readers of the book of Hebrews originally, been drifting farther and farther back, pulled away by the things of this world, whatever it might be, Jesus knows, and he cares, and we care, and want to help you, and can do that this morning. When the roll is called up yonder, I'll be there. Let's sing that confidently and encourage one another. And if you have any need, come now to the front as we stand.
When the trumpet of the Lord shall sound, the time shall be over.